On this episode, we got Darren Pang. He joined us talking all things Winter Classic, Blackhawks, and Connor Bedard. We touched on the positive, like the Ottawa Senators and Patrick Laine, and the negative, like the Buffalo Sabres and the New York Rangers. All of that and more on this episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast.
NHL at the Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into another episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. It's brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, we are getting closer to the Winter Classic, and we've got a great guest for this week. Darren Pang, broadcaster with the Blackhawks, formerly a player with the Blackhawks, going to do the game for TNT. Did used to broadcast for the Blues, too. I'm getting pumped. Are you?
I'm ready. I'm ready to leave right now. I don't even need Christmas.
Skip the whole holiday.
Don't even need it. Let's just get there. They're building the rink, which is always awesome. I still remember the first time we go in now, pretty late. We're going in the 28th, 29th. I remember that first game in Buffalo, and you drew the short straw.
No, it was the long straw. Still my favorite memory working for the National Hockey League. That
spent ten days.
Yes.
It was all in worth Buffalo.
At the Adams Mark. It was all worth it.
Yeah. But remember, I mean, that used to be the story of the Winter Classic. The rink used to be the story. Could they do it? It was such a feat of engineering. It had never been done. And could they do it? Could they beat the weather? And they've had huge weather challenges. They had one in Chicago the first time they played there at Wrigley. With it just being so cold that the ice snapped. You would think that cold wouldn't be bad, but too cold is bad. So now we're so proficient at it that there's no suspense left. Of course, the ice is going to be ready and it's going to be in playable shape for the NHL, but that wasn't always a given.
No, it wasn't always a given. It actually made the build-up to the Winter Classic or any outdoor game that we were doing. But the Winter Classic at the time, it made it even more special. But I am really excited. It's our second time in Wrigley Field. It's going to look different. You got Connor Bedard, you know, on the big stage. I know the Blackhawks are not a playoff team right now. The Blues are a bubble team. That's not what it's about. It's about the celebration. I love the fact that it's on New Year's Eve. We talk all about that with Darren Pang, and that interview is going to be coming up soon here. But and by the way, the first Winter Classic was also a time that the Buffalo Sabres were once a playoff team. Not the case right now. We're going to get into that a little bit, Sean. But there's big stories going on around the league that are of the negative variety, the Sabres being one, the Rangers being another one. And we will get there. But can we talk about something positive? It's the holiday season. I want to bring the holiday cheer to this podcast. The Atlantic Division, the top five teams look really good, and one of those teams that is now in the top five of that division and has won six of their past seven games and four games in a row is the Ottawa Senators. Sean, I ask you this question. With goaltending solidified, and man, has Linus Ullmark been good, are you becoming a believer in the Ottawa Senators?
First of all, Dan, when you said you were going to bring the holiday cheer, I was ready for
positivity,
some eggnog.
Man,
I was ready for eggnog.
I don't like that.
I don't know how you feel about the eggnog, but
don't like it.
Yeah. No, I can't do it, Dan.
Don't be the Grinch. Don't do it.
I can't do it. I can't do it yet. Look, I think two things have happened. One, Ullmark has been all world, and that makes a huge difference. If the Ottawa Senators can get a save, they're a pretty good team. And all this has happened since they messed with Brady.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
Since the rumors started flying, completely unfounded, I think, that, you know, Brady Tkachuk would look good on Broadway. They're unstoppable. And I'm glad. Look, now there's 6 points between the top five teams in the Atlantic Division. You know, Boston, with the way they're playing, aren't a guarantee. Tampa Bay, you know, you think they're going to figure it out. And Toronto, who's been at the top, may not have good goaltending for 4 weeks. Anthony Stolar's hurt. He has a pebble in his knee. Sounds not serious, but as somebody who has a few loose bodies in his knee as well, it's a very painful thing. Minor procedure to get it fixed. I think anytime you go under the knife, it's not minor, but that's just me. And out 4 to 6 weeks. He's been one of the great stories of the first half of the season. And I'm really curious to see what happens to the Toronto Maple Leafs now.
Well, it's Joe Wall's net. He's got to stay healthy and he's got to be the guy, you know, he does, but he, you know, I take this back when you to the Senators, because when you look now at the playoff race in the East, and I think it's fair to start looking at a playoff race. I know there's still 50 games to go for a lot of these teams and so much can happen, but we're past Thanksgiving. We're almost at Christmas, almost at New Year's, and it's so it almost becomes trade deadline season, right? I mean, this stuff happens so fast. Sean, if you look at the Ottawa Senators today, we're recording this Wednesday. Like I said, they've won 4 in a row and 6 of 7. They're in a playoff spot right now. The teams behind them are the Pittsburgh Penguins, who, yes, have played much better of late, but are we believing them? The Philadelphia Flyers, who are inconsistent. The New York Rangers, who can't score a goal now, let alone get a win, and we'll touch on that in a little bit. The New York Islanders, who have really struggled to score a goal. And then after that, Columbus, Detroit, Montreal, and the 0-8-3 in their last 11 games, Buffalo Sabres. The playoff spot is right there for the Ottawa Senators. It's finally, they're not chasing it now, Sean. And none of those other teams are doing anything to want it either. And there's a long way to go here. We have to see where Ottawa is in January 30th, right? Where are they when the Four Nations face-off comes around? Because I agree with you on that. Like, you can't just jump and be like, they're in, they're good, they're backed, everything's fine because they've won 6 of 7. Not for a team that only won 10 of its first 23 games. But, Sean, they're progressively getting better. Where these other teams are progressively getting worse or staying stagnant. Right now, yeah, I mean, the Ottawa Senators are a playoff team right now. How shocking is that?
Well, it is shocking, but it shouldn't be. The reason it's shocking is because they've never done it before. Like, you look at their roster.
Well, recently, yeah.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. Since we've started with the big three, or the little three of Buffalo, Ottawa and Detroit, and all of them building towards the playoffs, who's going to get there first? I mean, it looks like Ottawa now, but we've believed this before and it hasn't happened. Look, I'm hoping it happens. I think it'd be great. I think, you know, Ottawa-Toronto in the first round would be a fantastic playoff series. I just need to see more.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, but you're right. Ooh, Ottawa-Toronto in the first round. Bringing back the Battle of Ontario, that would be great. Right now it's set up to be Ottawa-New Jersey in the first round, Tampa-Toronto in the first round. What's Tampa-Toronto?
Ottawa-New Jersey's had a few goals.
Yeah, they've had a few. They've had a few as well. So, I mean, again, all right, so there's 50-some-odd games left to be played here, 50, 51, 52 for some teams. So, there's a lot to go there, but the Senators are a good story. We had to touch on it. Again, we're going to have Darren Pang on shortly here, talking all about the Winter Classic, the Blackhawks, Bedard, who just played in his 100th game. Really good stuff with Darren Pang coming up here shortly. Another good story going on in the Atlantic Division right now, Sean, and not in a playoff race right now, but a great story is Patrick Laine. Just had a hat trick in a game against Buffalo, a 6-1 win against Buffalo. And again, probably on the back end of the Pang interview, we'll get into the Sabres. We'll get into the Rangers a little bit. But Patrick Laine's got 6 goals now in 7 games. And there was talk Tuesday night after his hat trick game. By the way, all of his goals are on the power play. Is about the passion in his game. It's back. He's a goal scorer. He thinks he's more than a goal scorer. He's proven to be a little bit more than a goal scorer. But this guy he's so good at scoring goals that with a little bit of passion, he should be a 30-goal scorer as long as he's healthy. With the passion he's starting to find and rediscover and be reinvigorated by the game, he could be a 50-goal scorer. I don't know about this season because he started late because of the injury and whatnot. But it's such a, it's just, you know, it's holiday time, right? You look for feel-good stories and reasons to smile. And Patrick Laine has given me a reason to smile when he's playing the game and he's scoring goals the way he is, Sean.
Patrick Laine is one of those players that always makes me smile because of the way that he approaches the game. And that's why the last couple of years have been so difficult between the injuries and, you know, personal stuff that he had to take care of and all the stuff that went with it. You know, we've been blessed to cover him since the draft, and you know, one of the things that stands out is how confident he was coming into the NHL. He believed he should have been the number one pick, not the number two pick. You know, he wanted to prove that. I think he did early on, and then he had a really rough go in Winnipeg and, you know, needed to change the scenery and everything that went with that. But this is a player who, when he's on and when he's confident, is unstoppable. And, you know, you mentioned the Four Nations a little earlier, where Ottawa would be at the Four Nations. And it wasn't a given that Patrick Laine would be on that Four Nations roster. He played one game before they named the roster. He did score in it, by the way. But Jiří Lehtinen, there was no question in his mind. He's like, we're going to need to score goals. We're going to need to score goals on the power play. And he's our guy. And I think the faith that Jiří Lehtinen, who's a national hero in Finland, for any hockey player, they all look up to him. I think for Jiří Lehtinen to say that about Patrick Laine did wonders for Patrick Laine.
Well, I think it did too. It's a confidence game, right? I mean, you have to play with confidence. And Laine lost it. And as he lost his confidence, he lost his passion for the game. And the injuries hurt. The personal struggles that he was going through obviously hurt. But now he's back. And the other thing about this too, what makes it a good story is the Montreal Canadiens needed a good story. Right, I mean, they're still building. They're a younger team. They're trying to find their way. They needed something to really uplift them, or else it was just looking like it was gonna be, you know, it's just gonna be another season where they're not really around the playoffs. But oh, I'm taking the small steps. Laine's gonna help him take maybe bigger steps as he really gets into the flow and even more. Because remember, he's only played 7 games, but there's something there for the fans in Montreal now to really grab onto, and they have. They're chanting his name. They are These are some of the best hockey fans on the planet, right? And they haven't had much to cheer about in the last little while, and now they have a guy who he just, when he's on his game and when he's feeling good, he just makes you happy as a hockey fan. We've talked about, you just talked about it, right? So now Montreal fans have something to go to the rink for, something to cheer about. And I think, honestly, I think that's a really big thing in that market where they know and they've bought in. They've fully bought into a rebuild, but now they have something else to watch for here too. And I think it's a great thing. It's not just let's focus on who's the draft picks, where are our prospects. No, no, no. We got this guy. What's he going to do for us?
He's got the DNA of a superstar in him. And I think, you know, that's one thing that Montreal fans appreciate. They appreciate great players. So they've been blessed with them throughout their existence, and they've celebrated him. The other thing is he's us.
Yeah.
Patrick Laine is everybody in the stands. He's been beaten up. He's been worn down. He's gone through struggles, and he keeps getting up, and he keeps trying to be a better version of himself. And that's what 18,000 people in the stands are doing every day. And hockey's their escape. And for them to look down and see somebody who's living their life, obviously on a very different stage for very different money, but it's affirming. Like, I want to get up now the next day, and I want to do better.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's big for the Montreal fans. I really do. And I think they needed it, and they crave it. And you see how their reactions are to him. And it has been since he got there, and the ovation he got when he wasn't even on the ice. And, you know, there's a showcase of passion from the fans, and Line A is delivering it back to him. But like you said, though, I like how you said he's got the DNA of a superstar, because Connor Bedard has the DNA of a superstar too. But our guest, he's a superstar. Darren Pang, our guest on the podcast, here he is. We talked to him all about the Blackhawks, the Blues, the Winter Classic, the rivalry, and he had some really interesting stuff to say about the development of Connor Bedard through his first 100 games. Here is the interview with Darren Pang. Darren, thanks so much for jumping on with us. So just before we started recording, we were talking all about Winter Classic memories and whatnot. You seem really excited for this Winter Classic. You pumped up?
I am, Dan. I really am. And I remember the first time driving from the downtown Buffalo in 2008, and Sam Flood, of course, the executive producer of NBC, we're all in this big car, and Doc and Edzo, and it's raining, and we're all kind of, there was a little maybe anxiety to say, how is this going to work out, you know? And then the closer we got, man, the more magical it became. And I'm a music fan, and the history of Woodstock, or I'm not going to go that far, but it was almost like the amount of people in Buffalo that showed up, and you're looking beside you in the car, and they've got no shirts on, they've got their beer keg, they got their beer, they got their backpacks, they got their paint all over them. And I was just thinking to myself that was for me the best one. And they said the first one, you know, should be quite special, but it doesn't always work that way. The first one could have been a bust. The rain could have continued. There could have been delays and delays, but it didn't happen that way. And I just remember leaving that one saying, if this is the first and only one I ever do in my life, I'll be a happy man. It'll be just fine. And as it turns out, I did many more after that, but I'll always remember that first one in Buffalo, and the ice, the moment, Crosby. It was just unbelievable. It really was pretty cool.
Is it hard to imagine in that moment that it's still happening, and that it's been the Winter Classic and other outdoor games have been so many iconic places?
It is. And I think the people that aren't there, or the naysayers, I'll say, this has been done before. This is getting old. Just get to it again. Go see it again. Go to Minnesota a couple of years ago when it was minus 20. I've never felt so cold in my life. My bones were brittle and were going to break. But everybody was having a blast. And it's the city. It's the community. It's the now I get baseball. I get baseball because it's the walk-up. It's the excitement and the crescendo of excitement when you walk into this massive stadium. It's unlike hockey. You know, hockey, you've got to go in the concourse if you really want to feel that, but it's not expansive. And so, it is amazing. To be quite honest with you, it's amazing the work that the NHL have done. It's amazing from the very first time where they didn't anticipate a football stadium and the ground. You remember that? There was it kind of fell off towards the boards because that's the angle. So they had to improve that with 2x4s and make it flatter. Then they had to take away the big Zambonis. And now, if you recall, we've got kind of mini Zambonis on the ice, a lot lighter. And just the efficiency and the ability of the NHL to get the product as great as it can get, no matter what the circumstances are outside, is really impressive. It is some kind of work. And I hope people understand the magnitude of the work that goes into it to make the ice surface the best it can be, to make the experience what it is. And I love watching kids, you know, go through the I try to go through the concourse as much as I can. And it's hard because it is jam-packed no matter what building we're in. And just see the kids excited. They got their hats, they got their scarves, they got their Winter Classic paraphernalia, and you can't get enough of it. And that's it's a wonderful thing for sure.
And you know what? What you just said is really important, because I've covered all these games, and I always try to be outside for the start of it, for the anthem, for the flyover, to really feel for that. Even in Target Field, I was outside for the start of that, and I'm, you know, standing next to guys wearing ice fisherman gear, right? Because it was that cold. But that's the pageantry of it, right? I mean, that is what it makes it so good. And one of the things that I think, and Darren, I'd love your opinion on this, because you've done a lot of these games. Now it's on New Year's Eve, as opposed to New Year's Day, or the day after New Year's Day, January 2nd. So instead of everybody coming there fresh off of their New Year's Eve parties –
You
They're
can
going to
say
go there to start their New Year's Eve parties. And I think that just it, that's the unique part about this Winter Classic, along with like Bedard being in it for the first time and a different look that Wrigley will have from the last one. New Year's Eve, kind of cool.
an iconic Wrigley. I mean, you're right about that. The energy and the stamina to begin the game is going to be all world. But you're right. I mean, let's think about a 1 o'clock game on January, the 1st, and just how, honestly, I'm going to say, just how hungover and how your head is just rattling. And you've got to make yourself a Bloody Mary or a Caesar or have a Diet Coke and get going again. Now that's what this one's going to be. This one's going to be special in that area, because now you've got the game, you get there early. With Wrigley and with the neighborhood, the walking around is going to be outstanding. And there are a ton of Blackhawk players that are new to the team that are renting right in the neighborhood. So they're pumped up about that. I know Patty Maroon's right there. I think Nick Foligno's in that area. So they're so excited about getting their family and friends just, walking around and then getting into Wrigley. And then obviously the game being at it's 4 o'clock local, 5 o'clock Eastern, and then, by 8 o'clock, I mean, you got your reservation somewhere, or I mean, come on, you're at the bars right there around Wrigley. It's going to be something else. So hopefully the weather, let's cross our fingers that it's cold, but it's nice, and it's not raining and mucky. And I'm sure the Wrigley gods will give us a break there for sure.
So far, the weather looks good. I would lie if I said I haven't been looking at the long-term weather forecast. So right now, it looks good, but you've lived in Chicago a long time. You know it can change. You talked about a lot of the guys that are excited about it, and they've all played in it before. When we talked about the first one and how unique it was, what do you think it's like for Connor Bedard to play in this game, to be on the national spotlight, to be in a place where Crosby was in the first one, and to really experience all that? Because kids today, we romanticize about it. We say, oh, this goes back to the roots. There's very few kids in the NHL today that play outdoors on a regular basis.
No, that is a very, very good point. Very good point. Because I even, even in my time, I grew up in Nepean, Ontario, just outside of part of Ottawa, and I didn't go to outdoor ponds to skate. Very, very seldom did I do that. We didn't have ponds sitting there hunkering around our little city of Nepean. But what we did have was outdoor rinks all the time, and they were pristine because in the summertime those outdoor rinks were box lacrosse. So you played box lacrosse in the summertime, and then in the wintertime they've got a little hut with hot chocolate, and you've got your pickup games, and you just walk with your skate guards and right to the outdoor rink. So there's a ton of those experiences for the players. Maybe in Minnesota it would be different. Maybe in I'd have a little summer place in Michigan where I'm on a little one of those lakes, exactly it. And all the boys, when it gets frozen, man, they got the outdoor. They are playing hockey on the ponds, but not everybody has that experience. So you're right about Connor. I mean, he grew up obviously in North Vancouver and played at the Burnaby Winter Club. So that his memories would probably be, playing 3-on-3 with Matthew Barzell and all these guys, and then being an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old playing in a rink, and maybe there's not that many guys there on a Sunday morning. But to actually experience this, when they get on the ice the first time, and you jump on the ice because you don't want to fall, so you got to focus, and then you look around, there's just nothing like it. Even as a broadcaster, I played in one of these games in the alumni in 2017 at Busch Stadium. I played for the Blackhawks, even though I was broadcasting for the Blues. And I just remember thinking, I've got to play in this game. And Kelly Chase convinced me to play in it. And he says, you'll never get to play in it again. And he's right. I would never have played in one and never experienced what I try to talk to everybody about when I'm broadcasting the game. And now I have that experience of looking around and seeing, just exactly what it's all about, and seeing the sky out there and seeing how massive it looks. So for Connor to experience this is really, it's going to be one of those things in his life that I'm sure he's going to play in many more, because he's Connor Bedard and it is the Blackhawks. But you never know in life, and you can't take it for granted. And I do know this about Connor in my brief time with him: nothing overwhelms him.
Yeah.
Nothing. These lights are shiny. That doesn't matter. He loves the spotlight. He loves the big stage, and he plays his best when the big stage is on.
So he just played in his 100th game, too. And I mean, I got the numbers in front of me: 87 points, 29 goals, 58 assists, 87 points in 100 games. You've seen them all. So 100 games of Connor Bedard, summarize what you've seen from him. Has it met, if we could have realistic expectations, because I don't know if anybody had realistic expectations, but what have you thought of Connor Bedard through 100 NHL games?
It's a good question, and I like the fact that I've been around for the, you know, for the beginning of it. I'm going to relay this to fans. The first game that he played was on ESPN in Pittsburgh against his, you know, his hero. And he drops the puck, and, you know, I can't remember which referee it was, but a good veteran referee, and said, "Good luck, Connor. Welcome to the NHL." And then I think he did an interview before the game, in between periods, I think between the second and third period. And I think, yep, you know, like, that's game one in the NHL, let alone facing off against Crosby. Game two was on TNT. I think he did an interview on the walk-on. I think he did another one between, you know, in the game or between periods. And then might have done a post-game show. And he scored his first goal in the NHL on a wraparound on Linus Allmark. Welcome to the NHL. So with everything else going on, he's able to manage that part of it and kind of compartmentalize every aspect of it. So number one, I just want to let fans know how impressed I've been with that aspect of it. He's carrying around something very, very big that so many others have carried around. Every rink we go to, every warm-up, there's a 98 sweaters are surrounding where the players come out. They all want his stick. They all want to just see him in the practice facility at Fifth Third in Chicago. It's the same thing. And so now I'll get to the hockey player itself. I knew coming in that he had an unbelievable shot, kind of a dragon release. Everybody talked about the long stick, the whippy stick. And, you know, are we comparing him to, you know, Joe Sakic had a great wrist shot as a centerman. I think one of the finest wrist shots I've ever seen from a centerman, the way you could snap it. Other players were playmakers. Other players, can go 50-50 both sides. Connor, from the time the first game where all I did was watch for where he's going to release the shot to now it's like, okay, his stick handling looks sharper and quicker in traffic, where maybe when he first came in, he danced into traffic and he was a little unsure, and he ended up getting popped in New Jersey by Brendan Smith. You know, wasn't anything malicious or anything, just a hit, but he was reaching and leaning. I just noticed right now that everything is tighter. If you watch him dissect the neutral zone now, as compared to last year, Dan, it's so much better. I mean, the kid works on his craft. He's not a big one-time guy, but he's one-time in pucks. I didn't think he was a great passer on the backhand last year. He's worked on his backhand passing, distributing a little bit better, looking one way, Magic Johnson, passing the other way, you know, to give your winger or your shooter a little bit more space. And the other thing I'd say is he's feeling more comfortable in the grunt part of the game. He's not afraid to hack and whack a little bit more. You know, he's not afraid to get in the corner and you know, just push off somebody or lean into them. Whereas last year, maybe it was a little tentative, and maybe he got a lot of respect from a lot of people, so there weren't those battles. He's facing more battles this year. He's facing more. I like this because the younger players seem to want not a piece of him, but they want to be on him a little bit more. It's almost like the older guys are telling the younger guys in the room, "Hey, that's your guy. You take care of him," you know, yeah. And he gives it back to them. And so that part about it. And we recently did a game where he scored just a beautiful goal. I'm not sure if you saw it, where he brought it back into his skates, and we interviewed him in between periods. And I said, "You know, Connor, that was such a beautiful shot. I don't think I could have even stopped it." And he deadpans it. And as he's taking off the headset, he says, "You wouldn't have stopped any of them." And he just kind of had a smile on his face, and he takes his headset off. And people were kind of saying on social media, "Man, he gave it to you." And I'm like, I love when he gives it to me, because he's a great kid. He's respectful. But I want to see that personality from him. And certainly I've seen that. And I've seen him grow in that side of it as well.
You know, I was going to ask you about that, because he did. He came in, and like all young kids, he was respectful, but you could see the inklings of a personality. His smile lights up a room. And then he struggled a little bit this year before the coaching change, and he wasn't happy. Like, you watch games, and you could see his struggles, his inner struggles, right? Like, he's so used to being successful everywhere he goes. And, I mean, most players in the NHL would love to have the slump he was in. That he considered a slump, but I'm curious, being around him daily and knowing who he is, how difficult it is to watch something like that and then to see him come back out the other side.
Yeah. I mean, been around the game a long time, and I've seen a lot of great players go through really tough moments and tough times. And this was a little different, because he's carrying the weight of you know, the Chicago world on his shoulders. The team wasn't performing well. They weren't scoring goals. He's a goal scorer and a playmaker, and it wasn't happening for him. You know, I mean, you knew in time he was going to find a way to get out of it. But the fact is that with all the changes being made, so many people thought, okay, it's going to work with him and Teravainen and Tyler Bertuzzi, and it's going to work with him and, you know, maybe Kurashev will go back on that line, so that'll work. Well, it just wasn't working with anybody. And the coach, Luke Richardson, God bless him, he tried everything, and you know, if it's not working, it's not working. And so, you know, maybe could they've put some line mates out there for a little bit longer of time to maybe to create that chemistry? Yeah, but they were losing games and weren't getting any scoring. So I really felt for certainly for Connor, but I felt for the older players as well that have come on board and expected, you know, better things, you know, from the Hawks this year. So going back to Connor then, the one thing that he never did was he never changed. He never changed his routine. He never changed when he was on the ice early. He never changed that he was on the ice when the Zamboni was coming out. Like his work ethic, you know, and his drive to be great maybe helped him get through it. But he didn't rest on his laurels, is what I'm saying. Now the new coach comes in, and the first practice was a little bit different than the practices that Luke has had, and it was a little bit quicker. It was a little bit more attention right off the hop. It was like quick passing, quick drills, change the drills, a lot of whistles, a lot of stoppage, a lot of okay, no, that's not right. Let's stop and let's do it again. And so I think there was a teaching mechanism that Anders put into place right away that helped the defending part of the game. And if you're Connor Bedard or any young centerman, Macklin Celebrini, I mean, you name them all, Fantilli or anybody, and you lose faceoffs and you chase a puck for a minute and 25 seconds, like, well, you can't get anything done. So right away, Anders has come in, and if there's a faceoff that he thinks Jason Dickinson should take to win the faceoff, he puts Jason Dickinson on the ice. And so, you know, that's been the learning curve probably for Connor, and he'll get there where he's taking big face-offs. But right now, he needs the puck on his tape. So that's been a big difference. Not chasing the puck as much and stopping and starting in the defensive zone to make sure that he's not spending the whole one, you know, minute and 20 skating around and kind of swooping. Because again, you get the puck and you've got nothing left in the tank. So I think those are the parts that have really improved. Anders has got him skating the first three or four strides quicker. Get going right away and get the puck going through the neutral zone with speed and on your tape. And so it's all been working, and his game has changed, and the whole team has changed and have played a real good five-man unit game. And when that happens, then certain individuals are going to look better because of it. And clearly, Connor has reaped the benefits of this coaching change and the way that Anders is getting to these players and the system that he's instilling.
I wanted to ask you about the coaching change too, Darren. And the reason is because nobody, the expectations were low, right? For this team. And I kind of got a feel that maybe something was off. And I'm not saying Luke Richardson is a bad coach. I think he's going to coach again in this league, and I think he could be a successful coach in this league. But with the line changes that they were going through, the scratching of Taylor Hall, lots of different line combinations. I think there was a stretch where in 5 games, Bedard had 8 or 9 different line mates, you know, or something along those lines. Did you get a sense at the time that maybe this team needed something different to get to that next level? We're not talking playoffs yet with the Blackhawks, but you have to get to the next level, right? You can't stay where you're at. You got to get to the next level. Did you get a sense that at the time that, you know, response wasn't coming?
I did. I think that was kind of coming in a maybe 2 or 3 week span prior to that, Dan, that you know, you can just see it. You're watching the games. They've got, you know, whether it was another lead in the third period that was relinquished, you know, because they gave up two goals in a minute and 20 seconds. That's happened far too often, and it still happened with Anders recently, where there's that one letdown and you're leading, you know, you're on Long Island and it's a 1-1 game, and next thing you know, you give up 3 goals in 3 minutes and 6 seconds, and it's a 4-1 hockey game. And yet you rebound and you score 3 goals in 2 minutes and 6 seconds to make it a hockey game. So I applaud them for that. But for me, there was something missing. There was a whether it was a connection to committing to what they talked about before the games, to the was there enough adjustments being made? You know, Luke is such a respectful person. And you mentioned that, you know, in another opportunity, you know, maybe away from a team that, yeah, the expectations are not high right now, but you want to continue to make them accountable for everything, because you want to be teaching, you know, Vlasic and I mean, look at it, Korchinski and Connor, and even Kurashev's a young player. Lucas Reichel's a young player. You're gonna, you know, you end up calling up Frank Nazar. These guys have got to learn the game properly, and so you don't just skate away from a game and go, "Well, that's okay. We're gonna get on a private plane and stay at the Ritz-Carlton, and the thread count's gonna be beautiful, and life's all good." You know, we no, it's no. The game is the game, and you have to learn how to play the game the correct way. And so, you know, I didn't think about the change at the time. I just thought that there's something missing right here, and it can't go on the same way that it was going on. I didn't know that Anders would be a guy that they would knock on the door, but it makes perfectly good sense because of his relationship, but and his coaching ability. He's been a skills coach forever. He man, when he was in when in Sweden, he had Nylander and he had Pastrnak on the same team. You know, I mean, this guy, he knows how to deal with high end, maybe skill that has a little ego to that skill as well. And so I think he's got a really unique ability. And this turns out, as I've seen it, to be the right change at the right time for Kyle Davidson. And I can tell you, this wasn't easy for Kyle. I mean, I was in that press conference and I talked to him afterwards, and this was an emotional one for him. And, you know, but that's the business of hockey. You got to make changes. And he made that change as hard as it was.
Yeah, and I know you got a lot to do today. So one last quick one, and we're going to let you go. Your favorite Blues Blackhawks rivalry memory? Because it's a great rivalry. People that don't know it don't understand, but it is a great, fantastic rivalry in the
It
NHL.
is great. It starts off with the Wurtzes and basically selling the arena to the Blues and getting them in the league, and their love for boxing, their love for the figure skating and the circus. I mean, they're all very similar, but it was the distaste for, you know, the football teams, the baseball teams, and then the hockey teams. Mine personally, I just retired. And I believe this was 90 or 91, and I was in my first year of broadcasting in Chicago, and I was sitting in the organ loft when the massacre on Madhouse began. I think it was was it St. Patty's Day massacre, brawl behind the net. Charlie, Dave Manson, Scott Stevens. I mean, it was like a who's who of. Man, these guys don't like each other. It was Brian Sutter and Mike Keenan, because there was only a small glass partition between the two benches. That would be one. Another one would be, as a broadcaster, certainly the Troy Brower in Game 7 on home ice, scoring the game winner with about 4 minutes to go. That was a big moment for St. Louis fans to really finally overcome the Blackhawks, who just won, you know, three Stanley Cups in what a 6 year span. And well, that was probably one that, you know, as a broadcaster for St. Louis and knowing the history of Chicago, I just remember looking around and thinking to the like the Blues fans were thinking, finally, finally, you know, we beat them in a big, big game. And if you remember, just prior to that in the Winter Classic, you know, the Blues did win that game on a very, very big stage against Chicago. So I think those two things were significant in St. Louis history against the Blues. But all the scraps, all the brawls, all the fights, all the playoff series, those are all memorable. I think I lost the very first, as a Blackhawk goalie, I think I'm responsible for the first playoff loss ever to the St. Louis Blues. So Greg Millen was the goalie for St. Louis, and he beat us in a 5-game series. Bob Mason and I were the goalies for the Blackhawks. And then I heard the announcer say, I think it was Dan Kelly saying, "That's the first time that the Blues have ever beat the Hawks in a playoff series." And I was the guy in net. So
Oh,
a lot of
well,
great memories. Yeah, a lot of great memories.
it's a terrific rivalry. We'll see at Center Stage New Year's Eve. Darren, you'll be there for TNT. Thanks so much for jumping on with us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Happy holidays, guys, and I'll see you then.
Great stuff there with Darren Pang. And that interview was brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. And Sean, another, this is a good time. We should also mention that the Road to the Winter Classic, the show, third episode is out. It airs tonight, Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Eastern, but you can catch them all. TNT has it, Max, True TV, Sportsnet, and TVA in Canada. So Definitely check that out. A little behind-the-scenes look at the road to the Winter Classic. So the first Winter Classic, Sean, was in Buffalo. And remember, I mentioned, we've talked about it, and I mentioned that's when the Sabres were a playoff team. Well, they haven't been for a while, and doesn't look like they're going to be a playoff team this year, Sean. So all the positivity that we brought at the top of the show here before the Pang interview, and Darren brought all the positivity as well. Okay, let's look at the other stuff going on. The Buffalo Sabres have lost 11 games in a row. They had an owner, Terry Pegula came to Montreal to meet with the team, reassure them. They gave up a goal 19 seconds into the game. They blew coverage twice. They lose 6-1, Sean. My God. This is maybe why we're a little bit, on the fence with Ottawa, right? Because not that they've gone through Buffalo, but Buffalo's had those three-game winning streaks. Oh, they're feeling really good. And then this happens. I don't know. What's your take on the Sabres right now?
It's brutal. And I thought it was – I thought the real indictment was, Connor Clifton after the game said, you'd think we'd be better.
Yeah.
The owner showed up. It's the owner came north, by the way, Dan, just so
north.
Your geography
yes,
is right.
True. Not down. No,
he didn't come down from Buffalo.
I don't know the geography. Buffalo, Montreal. I mean, I'd have to look at a map, but okay.
Yeah, and he's right. Like, how often does an owner show up and say, hey, listen, we believe in you guys? I mean, that's what's been reported. The players wanted to keep it somewhat quiet, but what's been reported was that they believed in him and they think they can, they can work their way out of this. Lindy already tried to take it all on him, and protect the team that way, insulate them and say, this is on me to make them better. Yeah, but as a coach, you can do everything in your power to make a team ready. And then once they drop the puck, it's up to those 18 skaters and a goalie to make it work. And they clearly didn't.
Now, here's the thing with the Sabres, and it's exhausting for me because this just happens all the time. They've cycled through general managers. They have talent. It's not the GM. They've cycled through coaches. They're on Lindy's back. It's his first year. It's not the coach. Players. And we'll talk about the Rangers too. These guys, and it's got it. I think Ryan McLeod said it after the game. We got to look in the mirror. Should have been looking in the mirror a week ago, 2 weeks ago, right? They have to.
I don't know if it's that simple, though. Like, psychologically, there's something that's happening, right? Like, you lose for that long. It becomes a part of your culture, yes. Right? And to fix it is unbelievably difficult. I found it amazing because how much I like the New York Jets, which is not at all. but Aaron Rodgers, who was brought in, to fix the New York Jets. The most confident human being in the world.
Yes.
By week 14, said maybe this franchise is cursed.
I know.
And while as a Patriot fan, you kind of revel in it and you say, haha, that's funny. And then Sauce Gardner said, it seems to be part of our DNA. But they're both right. Like, when you learn to lose and when losing is okay, it's really hard, even as you cycle through the personnel. Like, that's the culture, right? That's the shared history that the Sabres have. And until somebody figures out how to break it and to write a new history and to change course, I think you tend to look for the negatives and at the negatives and say, that's where we're comfortable.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard to be positive at this point.
Well, they can't be positive. It's impossible to be positive. And you think,
but
we
just talked about Patrick Laine. And what's the difference? The difference is that he's positive, that he's confident. Like, they have to find a way. I just don't know how it gets done.
I don't know how it gets done either, and it's a culture. You're right. You think about the Boston Bruins, right? There's a culture of winning. There is a culture of accountability. When you arrive in Boston, if you're a new player and you put the sweater on, you are part of that culture and you better buy in. You better be a part of it. The culture is not good in Buffalo because it's been so long since they've won, and they do this all the time. But I addressed this a little bit in the mailbag this week. This has happened to the Sabres several seasons in a row now. This one is the unacceptable one to me because they've brought in guys who should be able to help. Jason Zucker, Ryan McLeod is fresh off of a Stanley Cup final appearance. They got Jack Quinn and Matias Samuelsson back from injury. And they've got guys there now. They have not won, but they've played in a lot of NHL games. You now have to take the next step. You have to take small steps in figuring out how to handle a little bit of success. Well, the Sabres don't handle any type of success well. We've seen it. They win three in a row. They lose three in a row. They win three in a row. They lose three in a row. They are 7-8-4 this season, Sean, when they've scored the first goal. So they get on the board first, and they don't win. Right? They don't handle success. They don't know how to do it. They lead after the first period in this season. They have had the lead after the first period in this season in 15 games. They have won 7 of them. Okay? So they're not handling. It's the baby steps to understanding, okay, what did we do to get the lead? Now we've got to continue along those paths. We've got to continue it. But when you're not confident, when you don't believe, when you don't have the culture of winning, and you give up the next goal, it tends to go the other way. Because you're looking around and going, what's going to happen next? To me, you can put the blame at the coach. You could put the blame at the GM. But the players have to take ownership of this. And at some point, somebody's going to have to step up. Somebody's going to have to, you know, be the guy that says that sets the example. And I think of the Florida Panthers, because remember, for years they were kind of floating around. Even the year they won the President's Trophy, they lose, right? Matthew Tkachuk came in and he set the example. Somebody in Buffalo is going to have to set the example to turn thing. And once it starts to turn, then there's got to be a consistency to keep it turning. I don't know who that guy is, Sean. If I had the answers, I wouldn't be doing this podcast. I'd be the one making a lot more money, finding out how to build Stanley Cup winners. But somebody's got to step in and be the guy here that turns it, that sets that example. It can't be the coach. It's got to be a player. It's got to be the player.
It has to be multiple players. No one player is going to fix
this. Well, yeah, sure.
It has to be a core group of players that just say, this is unacceptable anymore, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to show you how unacceptable it is. And, you know, that's what's going to happen. Again, you know, you go back to Connor Clifton saying, I don't understand how we weren't ready, right? And you know, it's a lot of times it's just simple things. Like, there's only one way that the Montreal Canadiens are going to beat you.
Give it to him.
It's on a power play.
Yeah. You give it to him.
And then you give him a bunch of power plays and Patrick Laine beats you single-handedly.
Yeah. Or you just turn the puck over and then you don't handle the puck in the offensive zone and the defensive zone, and they score 19 seconds into the game, as happened, you know, in that game. All right. But so that's the Sabres. The struggles are real. We don't know what turns it around. What about the Rangers? What turns the Rangers around, Sean? Because this is totally different than Buffalo, right? I mean, this is a team that was building. This is a team that had been a playoff team. They went to the Eastern Conference Final last season. They went to the Eastern Conference Final 2 seasons before that. And now they're a shell of the success that they had. I think if you're honest in the assessment of the Rangers, you saw the warts last season and they were just covered up. And you saw the warts at the start of this season, and they were covered up by goaltending. And they're not being covered up anymore because you can't cover it up for that long. But now you've got scratching Kako, and Kako being honest. You know, I'm not the worst. He's right. Mika Zibanejad gets the lowest ice time. He doesn't look nearly as engaged as you want your number one center to be. It's 3-11 in their last 14 games. And Sean, they just went into Nashville and they played one of their better games for through two periods in a while. And then they come out in the third period. They're down 1-0, but they're generating chances through 40 minutes and they play their worst period. I don't know what changes the Rangers right now. And everything that they've tried to do hasn't worked.
Well, first of all, if one of their best games has them down 1-0 to Nashville in the third period, that's a huge problem.
Big time. And it's even a worse problem when you then come out and play your worst period.
Nashville's is at the bottom of the standings.
Yeah.
They're showing maybe some signs of life. They've won 2 out of 3. Soros was great. You know, he's going to be, but it's not talent, right? Like the Rangers are an immensely talented team. I think it's mindset. Like when you think about what's changed from last year, like some really important players aren't there anymore. And they were important players because they were glue.
Yep.
And they kept the team together, you know, and they left in not the most pleasant way possible. You know, Barkley Gaudreau didn't want to go to San Jose. He didn't have to go to San Jose. It wasn't on his list. He ended up there. Jacob Trouba didn't want to be traded. In the end, he didn't have a choice. And I think that's hard on a team. Like, you can talk about being a professional and this is your job and all of those things. But they're human beings. And they have friends. And I just think it's a really hard thing to process. I don't think it's debilitating to the point that they're never going to pull out of it. But that room needs to be fixed. And again, it's going to be the players that do it because nobody else can.
Right. Think about it. If I just up and left, you wouldn't be the same. If I was unceremoniously shown the door, you'd be heartbroken.
If Bob Bender
wouldn't be able to do it.
If Bob Bender traded you against your wishes to inside the NBA.
Yeah.
And I got a new podcast co-host. I'd be off my game, Dan. I'd be lost.
Exactly. My point. We joke about it, but it's real. Like, and that's us joking about the two of us, but that's what the Rangers are going through. That being said, does anybody look like they need a week off more than Mika Zibanejad right now? And I say that in a real way. Last season, when the Rangers came back from the All-Star break, Igor Shesterkin didn't. Well, he came back, but he practiced. He worked on his game. He needed a mental reset. His first half before the break wasn't very good. They gave him 3 games where Jonathan Quick started those games. He worked on his game. He didn't have the pressure of having to do it again and again and again. It gave him that break. He came back and was much better from that. Why can't that happen with a skater? Why can't that happen with a forward or a defenseman? It happens with a goalie. Why can't it happen with a player like Zibanejad? Because I'm watching Mika Zibanejad all season. The confidence is gone. The game is not the same. He's not changing. It's like he's keeping to do the same thing over and over again, and it's just not working. And I think of his one-timer being the one example of, like, it's just not changing. And it's not going in the net either. I hesitate to say you want to call it a healthy scratch because that has a negative connotation with it, but that's what it would be. I think Mika Zibanejad is one player And I single him out for this, Sean, because he's such an important player for the team. He touches all aspects of the game. 5-on-5, power play, penalty kill, 6-on-5, 5-on-6, all of it. He's not engaged. And I think he needs a mental reset. I think he needs a week off. I think he needs to not have to worry about going to play the next game. Now, he'll probably fight it because he's a proud guy. But he needs to go work on some individual skills. He needs to work on his game and just get a mental reset. Obviously, I can't tell Mika's advantage there to go sit down. That's not my job. But I'm just saying what I've noticed. And he may not be the only one, but I single him out because he's so important to that team.
He is important. You could call it load management, Dan. Then you got it covered.
That's true.
But, like, you know, like, again, I look at this team, and like you said, you know, Kako gets scratched, and he's honest. Like, there's a time to be honest, and there's a time to take your medicine.
Just take it.
Right? And look, I understand you're a proud guy. I think Kaapo Kakko's been one of the best players on the Rangers for the last little bit.
Like, just wrote a story about his confidence.
I think he's shown, you know, who he can be. And, you know, I think other people have seen it. And you might not think it's fair, but what are you accomplishing by publicly saying, looking around your room and publicly saying, I don't stink as bad as some of these guys. They should sit.
Yeah.
If I'm sitting in that room,
that's not a
good I'm looking thing. To my left, I'm looking to my right, and then I'm looking at me and I'm saying, wonder who he means.
Yeah.
That's not bringing the room together.
No. That part of the comment was certainly, you could characterize that as a selfish part. I don't think he's wrong. You know,
I don't think he's wrong either, but when your room is already fractured and you're trying to figure out how to put it back together, I don't think that helps.
No, you're right. You're 100% right. So we'll see. Listen, I mean, the Sabres and the Rangers are going to be ongoing stories here for a while here. Certainly the Rangers are, because the expectations for them to be a top team in the Eastern Conference, and right now they're not in a playoff spot. But
closer to last place than they are to a playoff spot.
They are. And they're 3-11 in their last 14 games. Doesn't get any easier. They play Dallas on Friday, Carolina on Sunday, and the New Jersey on Monday. So good luck, right?
Dude, by the way,
teams in the league.
Those Devils are rolling again.
Yeah, they are. Dominating
they're,
right now.
They're playing defense like the 95 Devils. Toronto came in the other day, had one shot in the first period. Yeah. They had five shots after two periods. I was thinking back to that playoff game they played against Toronto when they only gave up six shots in the playoffs, which was one of the most dominating defensive games I've ever witnessed in my life, especially at that stage, right, in the playoffs. But they're allowing less than 20 shots a game.
Yeah. No, they have been very good. We had Tommy Fitzgerald on a couple, you know, what was it, a couple weeks ago, right? There's a lot of expectations now in New Jersey, a team to watch. That's the positive part. We touched on the positive. We touched on the negative. And Darren Pang was awesome to have on. Before we go, the NHL is partnering with iHeart, NHL Unscripted. It's a new podcast with Adnan Virk and Jason Demers. They get Nate Thompson on as a guest, so check that out. Of course, after you listen to all of our episodes, but definitely check that out as of course. And Sean, is there a Christmas salad that comes out on Christmas?
No, Christmas salad is for Thanksgiving, Dan. But
that doesn't make any sense.
Well, what in my life makes sense?
That doesn't make any sense. Why don't you have the Christmas salad on Christmas?
Because we don't have turkey on Christmas. And Christmas salad is
Christmas
turkey.
Salad doesn't have turkey in it.
No, but it's a turkey accompaniment.
Okay.
We're gonna do a little filet with some horseradish, mashed potatoes, and some Brussels sprouts, I think.
Night one of Hanukkah is also on Christmas Day. We'll be celebrating as well. Yeah, we'll be celebrating as well. Little potato latkes, right? Matzo ball soup. It's going to be good.
I'm there.
It's going to be good. All right. So The NHL At The Rink podcast. This was a lot of fun. It's brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part. Get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.